Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Good morning. Welcome to Undisputed. I'm Jenny Taft with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp. How are we doing today, guys?
We're doing great. I know someone is extremely happy about the subject that we're about to start the show with today. It's very near and dear to his heart.
Yes, that's why I have bad news for Shannon Sharp and great news for me and our viewers. We are going to start this show talking about Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Take it away, Jenny.
All right. How about that for a setup? We are going to do it. We are going to talk all things Michael Jordan because we are all patiently awaiting the release of The Last Dance documentary, talking about his final year with the Bulls. And just this morning, Michael Jordan said that that last season in Chicago was a trying year. He also said that GM Jerry Krause told Phil Jackson that the team could go 82-0, but he'd still not get the chance to come back, and Michael Jordan was not going to play without being coached by Phil Jackson. Skip, you were there. Could you believe this was happening?
Jenny, Shannon, 1998, I was the columnist for the Chicago Tribune. It was the greatest year of my career, and yet it was the most astounding of my career because what I was seeing unfold right before my very eyes. And remember, I had witnessed Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones falling apart after winning two Super Bowls together in Dallas, and this topped that. And lately, obviously, we've seen what happened between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. I believe this topped even that. I got to know that year Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson and a guy named Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause, for those who don't know or don't remember, was a chubby little guy with an ego even bigger than Michael Jeffrey Jordan's. Jerry Krause had played a little high school baseball growing up in Chicago and had started basically as a baseball scout in the White Sox organization owned by Jerry Reinsdorf, who also owned the Chicago Bulls. For reasons nobody could figure out, Jerry Reinsdorf elevated Jerry Krause to be the GM of Michael Jordan's Bulls. Jerry Krause did not draft Michael Jordan. He came the year after Rod Thorne drafted Michael in 84. Jerry Krause started in 85. And as slowly but surely the thing grew into the Bulls dynasty, Jerry Krause came to despise Phil Jackson because Phil Jackson had little to no respect for this little guy who thought, as Phil told me, he thinks he's the alpha of this dynasty? What? He's out of his mind. So Phil would openly ridicule little Jerry Krause in front of everybody to the point that when they signed their last one-year deal, as Jenny read, Jerry Krause told Phil Jackson, you could go 82-0 next year and I ain't bringing you back. Well, guess what? Michael Jordan had pledged public allegiance to Phil Jackson. If he goes, I go. And Shannon, I just couldn't believe that Michael was going to actually quit if, in fact, Jerry Krause actually fired Phil Jackson and prematurely blew up the dynasty. But you know and I know that's exactly what happened. And it got so bad that the summer going into that last dance year, that's what Phil called it, the last dance, Jerry Krause's daughter got married in Chicago, and he had the audacity to invite Tim Floyd, the coach at Iowa State that everybody knew Jerry loved and wanted to bring in as the Bulls coach, to the wedding and did not invite Phil Jackson to the wedding. That's how bad it got. And yet, Shannon, I still couldn't believe Michael was actually going to quit over this, and he did. And my final point to you, Shannon, and then I'll hand it to you, is that 2 weeks after the season ended, which with obviously the last shot holding the pose at Utah in game six, sixth championship, sixth MVP in the finals for Michael Jordan. I was walking with Michael in a pro-am golf tournament that he was playing in Chicago. He asked me to come inside the ropes with him. And on one of the holes on a par five, he hit his tee shot into a fairway bunker and asked his caddy for his three wood. And Shannon, you know enough about golf through your older brother, Sterling. Yeah. To try to hit a three wood out of a fairway bunker is a really hard golf shot. And I said to him, Michael, that's a tough one. And Michael said to me, no, it's not tough. I'll just imagine that the ball is Jerry Krause's face. It came to that. I'm going to hit that. And by the way, Michael nailed the shot and almost made it in two shots to the green because he's envisioning I'm going to whack Jerry Krause in the face on my golf ball. That's how bad it got in 1998 in Chicago.
Well, Skip, you were there, and we heard the same things that no matter what had transpired, that they weren't coming back, that he, you know, two three-peats was not going to be enough for Phil Jackson to retain his job. And Michael Jordan has said, I'm not playing for another coach. Now, Skip, at the time, I had only met Michael Jordan once, but I didn't really know a whole lot about him, hadn't spent a lot of time, and didn't know a whole lot of people. But after being around him just a little bit, knowing people that spent a lot of time, I am absolutely not surprised he didn't come back. Skip, you know one thing about that man. That man is stubborn as a mule, as a bull. And once he tells you something or once he says he dislikes you, he has nothing else to do with you. If he feels you've crossed him, Skip, remember when Charles Barkley criticized him, not the player, but criticized like, Mike, you got too many yes men around you. That was it. Done. He and Charles have been friends, you know, play golf together, go to Vegas, yada, yada, yada. That was it. But, Skip, the thing is that what we see, and you're older than I am, and so you covered sports and you know things about dynasties. The thing that kept the Bulls together from a player standpoint is that nobody thought they were Michael Jordan's equal. What broke the Warriors up, Skip, we're going to talk about this a little later, was the infighting and that KD didn't feel he was getting the praise and adulation that Steph Curry got. Kyrie and LeBron. Kyrie felt he was on a level with LeBron. He wanted to show he can lead his own team. Kobe and Shaq. Well, Michael never had that. Scottie Pippen and Rodman and B.J. Armstrong. None of those guys felt there was Jordan equal. But there was someone that felt he was the equal as far as the general manager and was not getting the credit that he deserved. And that was Jerry Krause. And normally, Skip, what happens is general manager and owner or coach and owner. We don't really never see it get to this level like this, where we're having a level of success that's really unprecedented outside of maybe the 60 Celtics. And then as you mentioned, Jerry Krause couldn't have been much more than 5'3", 5'4", rotund. And all of a sudden, you want the credit? Not one, you didn't take one dribble. You didn't take one shot. You didn't take on one screen, fight over the top of a screen, and you want credit. I've never seen anything like it, Skip. I've never seen, and I still haven't to this day, seen a general manager that basically sits up in the stand. Jerry West, and we know a lot of the general managers from Jerry West to Ozzie Newsome in different sports. Skip, they sit, Theo Epstein, they sit up in the stands and they're fine. But Jerry Krause wanted the credit, Skip, because he know this, they chronicle dynasties. And he wanted to be chronicled in a favorable manner. Well, this, I put this together. And Skip, he went out of his way. If Michael Jordan says, we need a T-shirt, he went and bought a jock strap. If Michael Jordan said, we need a Gatorade, he went and bought Coca-Cola. That's how he was. It was like he did things in spite of Mike. I've never seen anything like it.
And Shannon, you played pro football for a long time, and you played for two different franchises, two different owners.
Correct.
And yet you saw your friends on other teams and you saw how the game is really played off the field, the big business that can be pro sports. It still starts at the top. It starts with a Jerry Reinsdorf, owner of White Sox and Bulls, making the choice, the decision to say, I'm going to put little Jerry Krause, because I get a kick out of Jerry. He's kind of like me. We're kind of brothers. We're kind of birds of a feather from Chicago. We came up the hard way together. And he said, I'm going to put little Jerry Krause in charge of the Bulls, and I'm going to give him full authority. He can hire, he can fire, he can trade, he can do whatever he wants to run the Chicago Bulls. I will not interfere. He has full autonomy to pull the plug on that dynasty. Jerry Reinsdorf allowed that little man with that huge overblown ego to prematurely end what I think was the greatest dynasty. We're going to debate this a little later in the show. But he pulled the plug on it and got away with it over personal differences with a coach who publicly ridiculed him in front of other front office staffers and humiliated him. So he was allowed to do that. And that's the essence to me of pro sports. Michael Jordan, to me, was the greatest player ever. You think it's LeBron, I think it's Michael, but as a performer, he was something. I keep thinking back what Stephon Marbury said a couple days ago, that he was not from the earth. That's how I viewed him in 1998, getting to know him, being around him on a daily basis. And to think that this is the way pro sports work, that little guy sitting up in that office who barely played high school baseball can prematurely end the dynasty and the career of Michael Jordan, that's it. It was enlightening to me. It was an awakening for me. It was sad to me that in the end is how it was going to work. And yet, to your point, whether you call it pride or stubborn pride, Michael Jordan stuck by his guns and he did not play basketball for 3 years after that because he was Phil's guy. And if Phil's gone, I'm gone. And Phil went on, obviously, to coach the Lakers, and Michael did not go on to play again for 3 years until he went to the Wizards late.
Yeah, and Skip, the thing is that Michael being who he was, and I felt that we don't know, and you know, we're going to talk about this a little later, but as Michael had said many a times, he believed they should have been allowed to come back until someone beat them. Not give it up, not give up the reins, not abdicate the throne, make someone knock us off the throne. And Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause allowed this to happen. Because as you said, Skip, Jerry Reinsdorf is the owner. And Krause was acting at the behest. It was like, you have total autonomy. You want to trade a player? Trade said player. If you want to, you know, get rid of this guy, or do whatever you want to do. And like I said, Skip, there was time, you know this firsthand because you were there, you covered the team. There were times that Michael would want a certain player, and it was almost seemed like that Jerry Krause would get the antithesis of said player just to spite. Oh, you want him? Oh, you really want him? And this is like, okay, the Bulls about to trade. And that you're like, I don't think Michael wanted that guy. But that's, Skip, normally when players, they bicker back and forth, the owner or the general manager would say, figure it out. Skip, how did the owner tell the general manager and the head coach or the general manager and the best player, y'all get in the room and figure it out, when the general manager feels that he has so much control? You know, really Phil, your coach in Chicago is in my hand. Skip, Jerry Krause knew what Michael would do if he took Phil away. He wanted that because he wanted to show that he was the show. He knew Michael would leave. If you've been around Michael for any length of time, and a lot of the people that I've talked to have been around him for a length of time, if he says something, take it to the bank. And Jerry Krause knew that. That's why he said, even if he goes 82-0, he knew Michael would walk. He wanted Michael to walk. He wanted to get more. Skip, now it's a situation, as you mentioned, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. If I win without that guy, what now? I didn't need Michael Jordan. I didn't need Phil Jackson. I'm winning championships with Tim Floyd, which you and I both know was never going to happen, that Michael Jordan was the driving force. Michael Jordan was the engine. Okay, yeah, Scottie Pippen was a tremendous player. Michael Jordan was the engine. No car is going anywhere without the engine. I don't care what type of tires or what kind of body it has. It's not going anywhere. And Michael Jordan was that. But Jerry Krause refused to see that, Skip, because he wanted the credit. Skip, and that happens a lot. It happens a lot. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised because there was no equal on that team. But Skip, most of the time when we see dynasties, it's normally the players. When a player says, I'm the equal to the top billing, and if I go somewhere else and show you, I can show you what I can do. And so that's what we've seen happen between some of these dynasties that we think ended prematurely. But this dynasty ended because of Jerry Krause and his ego. He felt he deserved and wanted more credit, so he broke it up.
And to your point, Shannon, there were a couple of times when Jerry Krause did save Michael from his Carolina self, because there were a couple of times that Michael wanted a Tar Heel that you know, to bring in, such as Al Wood. He wanted Al Wood badly. Jerry Krause said, no, he can't play, and he went a different direction. But there were other times when Jerry Krause overruled the basketball staff, Phil Jackson. They all wanted Johnny Dawkins out of Duke, that you'll remember. And
yes,
no, he wanted Brad Sellers. So Jerry Krause took Brad Sellers, who was a bust. So it worked both
Ohio
ways.
State,
but
if I'm not mistaken.
The point was, yeah, and the point was that in the end, Michael Jordan put Jerry Krause on the map. Everybody in Chicago and everybody around the NBA knew who Jerry Krause was just because he was the GM for Michael Jordan. So in the end, he gets remembered for pulling the plug. And here's my case that I'll make to you, Shannon. Remember, Michael took the next 3 years off, and I think they were still end of prime years. Maybe he had two more end of prime years, age 35 and 36. Remember, Tony Kukoc, who was a key cog on that team, he played eight more years. Scottie Pippen, who was the second best player, obviously, on the team, played six more NBA years. You look at Dennis Rodman, who was the key piece, rebounding, below-the-rim rebounder. He psychologically blew himself up. He had all kinds of problems, you know, off the court. But he went on to play for the Lakers and the Mavericks the next couple of years and averaged 11 rebounds for the Lakers and 14 for the Mavericks in fairly short stints. But I still think you had two more years of Dennis Rodman in Chicago under Phil and Michael, who could have kept him between the lines and in bounds, I think, for maybe two more years. And then we go down to Steve Kerr, played for five more years. Ron Harper played for three more years. And the two big guys, Luke Longley and Bill Winnington, played 3 and 2 years, respectively. So my point is, yeah, they could have kept this together for two. I think they could have won two more championships, which would have brought it to a total of eight. And I believe Michael was still playing at a peak level. He was obviously the MVP of that last finals. He made first-team all-defense that year in 98, led the league in scoring in 98. Yeah, I think he had two more championship years in him, and that dynasty got blown up prematurely.
You know, Skip, Jerry Krause, a coach once told a player, I was on the team, and a coach told a player, he said, son, you're like the final piece of the puzzle. And if someone doesn't let you put that piece down, you'll mess the whole damn puzzle up. If that's what Jerry Krause did, Skip, he was a piece of the puzzle. But what, because they wouldn't let him be the last piece, which he deemed the most important piece, he was willing to mess the whole damn puzzle up. Why? You got something great going on. Now, Skip, look, once you have won that much, and we're talking about him, so Jerry Krause is getting what he wanted. He's getting the, even though it's not the, you know, the adulation, we're actually talking about him. And Skip, he does deserve some credit. He drafted Scottie Pippen. He made the trade for Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr was originally with the Cavaliers, and he brought in a lot of these pieces. He traded Charles Oakley for, if I'm not mistaken, for Cartwright. So Skip, he did some good things. Okay, but you're not on the court playing. It's the players. It's the coaches. The day to day. You're not in meetings. You're not at practice every day. So he wanted something, Skip, that he was never going to get. And no matter how great a guy is, Skip, look, the Steelers guy, I forget his name, in 74 that he drafted, his first four picks all went to the Hall of Fame. Took Lynn Swann, he took Mike Webster, he took Jack Lambert, John Stallworth, Mike Webster. Skip, nobody remembers who he was. It's all about the players. It's about Chuck Noll. It's about that's what it's about. And Jerry Krause wasn't willing to accept that, Skip. I don't know if they could have continued, and we're going to talk about this. I don't know if they could have continued to win, but they should not have been forced to abdicate the throne. Kick their butts out of the kingdom. If you beat them, okay, it's done. Nah, we're not giving you enough a chance to, you know, to bring it back. And okay, that was just one time. That was, you know, one time that we lost. We had been 6-0. No, you're done. Give them that, but Skip, to just break it up over pettiness and over ego, I didn't think that was right.
So do you disagree that they could have won two more? You don't think they could have?
Skip, Michael was 35. Scottie Pippen was 35. Pip was 32. And remember, you said he had a back issue that was really bad. And we don't know. Skip, there's a difference between playing eight more years and then played 8 more years with that kind of scrutiny. There's a difference between playing 6 years and then playing 6 years with that intensity and that expectation. You know what happens. Expectations ages people. Look at President Obama had jet black hair when he took office. And then when he left, his hair was snow white like Frederick Douglass. So, Skip, we know what expectations and the expectation of winning championship, because once you win, nothing else matters. It's not about going 70-12 and you don't win the title. The title was what they were chasing. And that's a lot to put on a man's plate. And so it's easy to say, but Skip, I'm going to say this before we get to the, we're going to talk about this later. Everybody thought it was a foregone conclusion. The Golden State Warriors was going to three-peat, and they were going to be, and they are, was going to be one of the great dynasties in modern time. And then a funny thing happened. KD's Achilles all of a sudden unraveled, and KD's knee unraveled. And we see what happens. So, Skip, that's wishful thinking. We'll never know. We've seen this before, Skip. If this guy hadn't got traded, or said player hadn't have retired, or went to a different team, ain't no telling how many. But, man, that injury bug is the great neutralizer, and then you never, ever know.
Well, obviously, Michael Jordan had the one injury early to his foot, and stayed healthy the rest of the way. So he did not have an injury history. So I think he would have been, knock on wood, okay. But I still think, Shannon, that they had enough life and enough legs left and enough pride that they could have won a couple of more. So I'll sum this up for you by leaving you with one quick story about a clash that I had with Jerry Krause. And I had many, many conflicts with him, because he was so out of line. But I wrote one piece that he really did not like. And I happened to bump into him as he was coming out of the restroom, and I was going into the restroom at the Coliseum in Charlotte after a playoff game. He pulled me aside and he said, "How could you write that about me? How could you do that to my family?" I said, "Jerry, I honestly don't care about your family. I care about this Bulls family. How could you break up this family? You're about to explode it. That's what you should care about, is the Bulls family right now." And he wouldn't. That was the last words that I spoke to Jerry Krause.
Well, see, Skip, at the end of the day, he wasn't thinking about the other people's family. Only thing he was concerned about was his own family. What about those families that was going to be broken up and going to be having to go different places? And I guess he thought that was a part of the business. Like, you know, me doing what I do, that's a part of the business. Well, you have to understand, what you do is a part of the business also, is that you write articles, sometimes they praise, sometimes they criticize. You got to be willing to accept the good with the bad. No mercy.
According to reports, the NFL will not make a decision about the potential reinstatement of D-lineman Eldon Smith and Randy Gregory before the draft, which makes things interesting for the Cowboys. So, Shannon, with that in mind, should the Cowboys take the best edge rusher at number 17 just in case?
No, I would take the best cornerback available at 17. Skip, they lost Byron Jones. They only had 7 interceptions last year as a team. And tied for fewest, and you bring back Anthony Brown and Awuzie at the 2 starting cornerback spots. Skip, you need a corner. And hell, you're paying DeMarcus Lawrence $20 million. What the hell are you paying him for? You need, I mean, come on, Skip. You just signed Gerald McCoy. I mean, and if the corner's gone, because we believe Okuda will be gone a lot earlier than that. But I hear they like this kid, C.J. Henderson, out of Florida. And I think there's another guy, I can't recall his name off the top of my head, Skip. You take that corner. Do you need someone on the back end? That was been the weak link for the Cowboy for the longest period of time. And if all those guys are gone, if there's a receiver there, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, you take him. Skip, you don't reach for a rusher if you need a corner. Take the corner and live this, and then worry about an edge rusher in round 2.
I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to wish the worst on my Cowboys. You want them to pick a bust at number 17 so that you can gloat next year, right? Just for the record. Just to disqualify your opinion.
No. Do you not need a cornerback? Yes or no? Do you not need a corner? Yes or no?
Even worse, we need an edge rusher because to me, I value the edge rusher above the cornerback because obviously they work hand in hand. But if you can't get to the quarterback, the cornerback often doesn't matter because obviously if you have too much time to throw, the best cornerback in the draft, C.J. Henderson, or as you said, Jeff Okuda, that they're going to have no chance covering a receiver for 7 seconds. So to me, Robert Quinn predictably took the money and ran to Chicago. I don't blame him a bit for that. But he was my best edge rusher, my best defensive end last year. DeMarcus Lawrence didn't remotely, as we know, live up to a $100 million contract last year. Did he have a shoulder issue that troubled him and slowed him down? Yes, he did. Can he be way better than he was? Yes, he has to be. So it's also troubling to me, Shannon, that they couldn't get a ruling quick enough on Alden Smith and or Randy Gregory to know if they're vulnerable at the other edge rusher. It's critical to this defense to have somebody else who can get to the passer. And again, maybe Commissioner Goodell would give Jerry Jones kind of a little wink, wink, heads up. Yeah, I'm going to reinstate him. I just don't have time to do the paperwork mm-hmm. right now because obviously Commissioner Goodell has way more serious issues than reinstating Alden Smith or Randy Gregory on his plate right now. Mm-hmm. We know that. But do you really think he'd give Jerry Jones a heads up before the draft that they will get reinstated? Jerry has been an adversary of Commissioner Goodell. So I don't know that Roger's going to do Jerry any pre-draft favor here. So I'm saying you're hanging out to dry here, that you're highly vulnerable. If in fact one player, I'm going to hit you with one huge name here. If one player falls to 17, which is highly possible, you have to take this edge rusher. He just might be the best edge rusher in the draft. To my eye, just watching television, I thought that Ke'Lavon Chaisson at LSU leaped off my screen even more than I saw Chase Young leaping off my screen for the Ohio State. And obviously, Chase Young is just the runaway second pick in the draft, and we get that. And yet, I think we both have said, gee, they're in some of the big games, it looked like he just got engulfed, that his quickness just got overtaken by massive left tackles. So what I saw from Chaisson when I watched LSU in big games, he was unblockable. And so then I read that earlier this week, the Cowboys did interview Chaisson. So that's number one. And then number two, last night, I always like to read the capsules on NFL.com post combine from Lance Zierlein, who does an excellent job of breaking down the combine prospects. And when he wrote about Chaisson, guess who he compared him to? And this is before we knew anything. He compared him to Alden Smith. He said he's the next possible Alden Smith, that he can be a game-changing pass rusher. He's 6'3", 254, so he's in that mid-range of where he's more athlete than physicality. But every time I watched mm-hmm. number 18 for LSU, he leaped off my screen. And by the way, they gave him number 18 because they consider that the leadership number on the LSU defense. And he was that. He led them in rushing the passer and as the leader on the field. So I love the intangibles. I love the tangibles. And again, Mel Kiper's got him going one pick earlier to Atlanta at 16. But if he falls to 17, Mel Kiper's got him falling well past that to Seattle at 28, and yet both acknowledge that he's the second best pass rusher in the draft, edge rusher. Man, mm-hmm. I'm taking Chaisson right there. Bingo. Thank you very much. I don't care what your needs are at cornerback. You can figure that out. That TCU kid, Gladney, might be there in the second round. That's who Mel has them taking in the second round. So, Shannon, if he's there, I'll take Chaisson over Chase, I think, in the long term. He just looks, to my eye, like he might be the better long-term game changer.
Skip, I'm looking at it, and Mel Kiper has them taking the safety out of Alabama, Xavier McKinney. Skip, I think they need secondary help more than they need an edge rusher. You know, DeMarcus Lawrence, and you believe that he had a shoulder injury. He was nicked. Okay, so he should be 100%. Now, you signed Gerald McCoy. Now, it looks like to me that Mike Nolan, the Mike Nolan I know, he likes to base out of a 3-4. And it seems to be that's the direction that they're heading is in a 3-4. So with that, Skip, I still believe, I mean, C.J. Henderson is the second best rated corner. They got Terrell out of Clemson. They got Tavon Diggs out of Alabama. Skip, and I'm not saying it seems to be Okuda is the runaway number one corner. I think on everybody's draft board, he's the best corner out there. And clearly, he's going to be gone when the Cowboys pick at 17. But Skip, you need secondary help. That was pathetic last year. In 16 games, you only had 7 picks. Really? So for me, you need a corner. Okay, if Xavier McKinney is there, you got to take a secondary guy, Skip. A safety or a corner, you need that.
Okay, so the Hall of Famer Shannon Sharpe is telling me he values corners above edge rushers.
No, Skip. But here's the thing. The question is, do you have the corner rated higher than the edge rusher? Because, okay, you need both. Okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, Skip, we need both. But the corner is rated higher on our draft board than the edge rusher. Then what do? You need both. But one is rated higher than the other.
All right. I watched C.J. Henderson a lot play for the University of Florida last year, and he's really good. He is clearly the second best corner in this draft. In my eye test off television, I would say Chaisson would be higher on my draft board than even C.J. Henderson would be. And I'm pretty sure C.J. will be gone by the time the Cowboys pick at 17. There's some reason that teams aren't as sold on Chaisson, and I don't know why. He did not run at the combine. I think he had a hamstring or something. There was something going on with it. There's some reason that there's some skepticism that I don't get. I think he's going to be the steal of the draft. So on my draft board at 17, he would be higher than C.J. Henderson. But I get what you, I mean, obviously you need a corner, but what did I keep telling you about Byron Jones? He would make a Pro Bowl and not intercept a pass. I can count on one hand the times he even got his hands on balls. He intercepted 2 passes in 5 years. He just has no ball instincts. So I think he was very overrated, and I think the Dolphins dramatically overpaid to get him. He can definitely cover. He's freakishly athletic. I give you that. And he's a big, strong corner. But he has no ball hawk skills. And so, to me, Anthony Brown's pretty good. Jordan Lewis is pretty good. You might be able to get away with him. And I told you, if you get the Gladney kid in the second round, he probably would start for you. So, again, Chaisson is my pick at 17 if he's there. And I think people are laying in the weeds to take him earlier, but we'll see about that.
Skip, let me tell you why people are not so sure on Clavon Chaisson. Is Bartavius Mingo. You remember that linebacker that came out of LSU and everybody thought, oh, my God, they was ranting and raving. Yeah, I think he went 6th overall to Cleveland. And then he went to New England. And then he went to Seattle. And so I don't know where he is now. Yeah. And I think that kind of scared because he could have kind of like the same body type as this kid here. And it kind of is kind of scaring people off. They're like, well, we thought we had a can't miss in Bartavius Mingo. And lo and behold, we missed bad. The question is, Skip, if C.J. Henderson and the Chaisson kid is there, you would rather them take the edge rusher as opposed to the corner. Because you do know, Skip, let's just say for the sake of argument, they hold up for just that bead longer. You're in trouble.
Okay, it's a good point you make about Mingo. That was a long time ago, and obviously that doesn't mean that Chaisson is going to be a bust. And Mingo wasn't a bust. Mm-hmm. He just couldn't live up to the 6th overall pick. But I felt like he was more of a pure linebacker, while Chaisson is a pass rusher who can also drop and cover. I saw him drop and cover two or three times where I was like, wow, he can move, he can run. So, again, I think he's going to be way better than Mingo was. No mercy.
All right, guys, ESPN did a ranking of the greatest NBA dynasties. And you know who they put at number one? Bill Russell's Celtics and their 11 championships. In second place, Michael Jordan and his Chicago Bulls. And in third place, Magic's Lakers. So, Shannon, how would you rank them?
I would rank the Celtics first. And I get it, Skip. A lot of times when we look at the Celtics, those great teams, we look at there were only eight teams in the league at that time. But it's hard to argue 11 championships in 12 seasons. And the length of the dynasty is what's impressive. And if you look at the 1963 team, it had nine Hall of Famers of 12 players. Second, Skip, is where I'm going to surprise you. I got the Lakers and Magic because that dynasty went basically from 1980 until 1991. Nine finals in 12 seasons. And Skip, when I talk to people, we're debating, we're having barbershop talk. Jordan beat the Lakers, Magic was old, and you know, it's like Magic was only like 31, 32. I said, there's a difference between a guy that's 31, 32 that's gone to nine finals in 12 years as opposed to a guy that has missed the playoffs eight of the last 10 years. I said, you look at what Magic and them had to do. And Skip, if you remember, Skip, I think if I'm not mistaken, they played the Celtics in 84, 85, and again in 87. And we know what the Celtics represented. And they also had to fight through the Bad Boy Pistons. We know what they represented. And they also had to play in the early 80s, the Sixers, with Dr. J and those teams. And we know what they represented. So, Skip, for me, I'm going to put the Lakers at two. I'm going to put the Bulls at three. Because they had a shorter reign. I understand they were undefeated in their reign. But for me, Skip, I think the Lakers and the road that they had to go was much tougher. And it was longer. So I got Celtics 1, Lakers 2, Bulls 3. But you noticed on that list, Skip, also on that list were the Warriors and the Spurs. And that was old dynasty that little LeBron had to go through. So I'm trying to see... But go ahead. You know, I'm going to let you follow that up. But you see what's on that list.
Ho-hum. Another day on Undisputed and more Jordan hate from my partner, Shannon Sharp. It's okay. I get it. But I'm about to crush it. Because let's start with Bill Russell's Boston Celtics. I'm sorry, Shannon. It was an all-time great run. I certainly can't argue that. But when you win your first nine of those rings against an NBA that had fewer than 10 teams, I got reservations. There were eight teams for a while, then there were nine teams for a while as they won their first nine rings. And thanks to the great Red Auerbach, they had a corner on the market. They had an embarrassment of riches, as you just pointed out, of talent that they had everybody. Thanks to Red, they just, I want him. And they were just too good because their cupboard was more stocked than any other cupboard by far. So I don't know. It's hard for me to give in to that. I give it. It's the longest run with the most success. 11 championships in 12 tries. I got it. But now let's get back to more current, more modern era. Let's get back to Showtime versus Jordan's Bulls. And for me, Shannon, it ain't even close. Because as spectacular as Showtime was, as fun to watch as Showtime was, more fun to watch than Jordan's Bulls because they were more defensive mindset based. Even though Jordan was a spectacular scorer, he was also an even more spectacular defender. But when I look at Showtime, it was spectacular peaks and too many valleys. You did not mention all the valleys because in their 11-year run, they had six disappointing playoff finishes. And let us count the ways quickly if we can. After Magic stepped in at center in 1980 in his rookie year for Kareem, and they pulled off the game six win and won the championship in Philly. Okay, that's the first one. But then in 81, they lost to the Rockets in three, in a best of three, in the first round of the playoffs. Okay, that's not great. Then in 83, they got swept by the Sixers in the finals. That's not too pretty. And then in 86, they lost to the Rockets in five games in a seven-game series in the Western Conference Finals. And then in 89, they got swept in the finals by the Pistons. That was the time when, obviously, Game 1 Magic and Byron Scott pulled their hamstrings. Magic was somewhat available the rest of the way. Byron was not. They still had Worthy and Perkins and Kareem, but they got swept ingloriously. And then in 1990, they lost to the Suns in the second round of the playoffs in five. And then, of course, without Kareem in 91, they lost in five to Jordan's Bulls. And you can argue it wasn't a fair fight, but they did win game one in Chicago and turned around and lost four straight games decisively as Jordan's Bulls arrived and said, watch this, here we go. So, again, I just gave you six glitches, which disqualify Showtime because once Jordan broke through in 91, the only glitches were he had a forced sabbatical. Some people thought it was because of his gambling. Others thought he just wanted to go play baseball. I think the former. I think he was forced to take the sabbatical. And then we talked about to open the show, he was forced into early retirement at age 35 by Jerry Krause, who wanted to blow up the Bulls because he hated Phil Jackson, who despised Jerry Krause. So, again, I think that run for Jordan's Bulls, if you take away the sabbatical and you take away the premature retirement, I think they could have won 10 straight championships and would have won 10 straight championships.
No, 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 Skip. Skip. They listed the Bulls dynasty starting in 1989. So, 89, they didn't win the finals. They didn't even make it. In 90, they didn't make it. So, no, no, no. We're not talking about no 91. We're talking about 89. They listed the dynasty at the time that it started and when it ended. That's what they listed it as. They got from 1989 until 1998. Oh, I'm not going to let you start this at 91. Now, hold on. We talk about Magic. They went out. They lost to the big three Celtics. The big three Celtics. You remember when they when Magic got swept in 83 by the Sixers, Moses Malone was the regular season MVP. Moses Malone, for people that don't know, is a three-time regular season MVP. He was also finals MVP. The year that they lost in 81, Moses Malone was on that team in Houston that beat the Lakers. So Moses Malone was not a slouch. They played the Sixers. The Lakers played the Sixers three times in the early 80s. They were 2-1 in the finals. And then, flip that back, Skip. Think about this. It was a revolving door, the Bulls. They would play Seattle. They would play Utah. They would play Phoenix. They would play Portland. The Lakers, they either got the Sixers or the Celtics for the first half of that decade. That was it. There was no revolving door. That was it. Think about it. You had to beat the Celtics first of all, you would either have to beat the Sixers or the Celtics even to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's what you're going to have to do. And then the bad boy Pistons came onto the scene. Skip, stop this. The bad boy Pistons kept the Lakers, kept the Celtics, not the Celtics, excuse me, the Bulls smacking them. Whack up, swacking Michael, whack up, Scotty, whack up. So let's not talk about no 91. This thing started in 89. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Michael Jordan, Orlando, can you tell the people what happened in the second round when Nick Anderson stole the ball and they beat the brakes off the Bulls? Did that not happen? I just need to know, did it happen? Yes, it did. Yes, it did. So for me, when I look at the Lakers and what they had to go through, hold on. Orlando didn't beat the Bulls in the second round in 95? With Shaq, Penny, Nick Anderson, Dennis Scott? Are you sure?
Michael took off most of that year and came back late for the playoff run and was not in any shape. He was not ready to make a deep run in the playoffs. He had been playing baseball. He'd been gone for almost two full seasons when he came back. No, we'll start it.
Whoa, no. Skip, I ain't gonna do that. Hold on. First of all, how's that my fault? Now, look here. I ordered some from Grubhub. Now, they charged me. I ordered me some lemon pepper wing from Wingstop. I ordered that from Grubhub. They messed up my order. They didn't give me all my wings I ordered. There's like, but they charged me for it. How's that my fault that the driver didn't get that or y'all didn't give it to the driver? Y'all need to take that up, take that last 15 wing piece off my bill to show that. How's that my fault that Michael Jordan took off? Did he play? I just need to know, was he on the team that lost to the Orlando Magic in the second round? A simple no or a simple yes will suffice. I don't care about what he did before then. Was he on the court? You didn't say nothing about that when he dropped that double nickel on the Knicks. You didn't mention that he took off half the season. You told, oh, Michael Jordan dropped 55. Okay, I need that same energy. I need that same energy, that same passion that you had with your chest out when Nick Anderson and Shaq and Penny blew him off the court.
I did not mention the double nickel game. I didn't mention that whole year because he was forced out of basketball. I'm sorry. It didn't count to me. Anybody who saw Jordan on the court against Orlando had a hard time recognizing him because he'd been out of basketball for so long. But next year, when he got his training camp and he got his legs underneath him, you know, and I know what started to happen again, another three-peat. So you're the one who made all the excuses for all those valleys that Showtime suffered through their run. And all I know is their run started when Magic won his first championship. And so I'm going to start Jordan's run when he finally broke through in 91 to win his first championship. That's when the dynasty started. And it should have won 10 straight championships.
No, Skip, baby. No, that's not when the dynasty. That's not when the dynasty started. They list the dynasty as 1989. That's when they say Michael Jordan dynasty started. That's what they say. But the Lakers are having to beat teams that are dynasty. The big Celtics was a dynasty that's on this list. That's what the Lakers had to go through. The Bad Boy Pistons are on this list. Skip, this was not the same. The team that Michael beat with the Lakers, Skip, Byron Scott didn't play. Magic was on his last legs. Big Game James Worthy was also on fumes. Kareem had gone. Skip, this was not the same team. And now, prime, you talking about mid-80s Lakers or against the 96 or the 98 Bulls, Kareem or Scott hook them out in the building. You know that, I know that. So...
I don't know that.
You do know that. They had a skill. First of all, Weddington, Cartwright, Purdue, never. Even Kareem at 40, they couldn't do anything with it. You do realize Kareem was Finals MVP in 1985. How old was Kareem? 36, 37, maybe even 38. Skip, you need to stay. You know, Skip, I love Skip. You make it seem like, you see, I see what you try to do. See, and I keep telling you, it's the same thing with players. Because you were so close to the Bulls, you covered them. You done got, and the thing that you get on me about, getting all buddy-buddy with the players, it clouds your judgment. See, you done got buddy-buddy with old Mike and Phil Jackson. Now they become untouchable. The very thing that you told me to avoid when I got into this business is that you do. You got close to Mike, and now it's clouded your judgment.
No, it hasn't.
No,
it's
that's
made
all you got?
Even smarter
that's all.
About how great he was. You know it and I know it. And Shannon, if we go back to that 89 finals, Magic did pull his hamstring and Byron his hamstring in game one. Magic tried to play for the next three games. Byron didn't. But
Couldn't. Your
man Kareem was there and he was still at the backside of his prime. And he averaged 13 points and 5 rebounds and they got swept. He was there. Worthy was there. I don't know. Where was your man, Kareem? Couldn't he level the court?
Skip. That man was 39. Kareem was probably 40 years of age. And you talk about on the backside of his prime. So I love how you say Kareem was on the backside of his prime. But when Michael went to Washington, oh, he was way past his prime. If I'm not mistaken.
He was.
No. Oh, yeah. I do care. Okay. No. I'm not going to let you do that. Michael Jordan was 38 in Washington. Kareem was 40. And you gonna talk about Kareem was on the backside of his prime, but Michael was way past his prime 2 years younger. No, Skip, don't do that. You know what the Lakers and the Celtics, those clashes, you're talking about maybe two top five dynasties of all time going at it. Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, Skip, seven or eight of the finals, with the exception, think about it, with the exception of the Lakers, the Rockets in 81 and 86, the Lakers was in the finals every year. Let that sink in for a second. In the decade of the 80s, other than the Rockets in 81 and 86, it was the Lakers. And then, what was that, 90, if I'm not mistaken? No, go ahead.
Okay, I need to ask, where was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the unstoppable skyhooker that he was? Where was he in 81 when they lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Rockets, and in 83 when they got swept in the finals, and in 86 when they lost to the Rockets again in five in the conference finals in a seven-game series? Where was he then? That he's definitely in his prime then. Wasn't he unstoppable? Yeah. Shouldn't Showtime have closed those deals? Magic, Jordan's teams would have closed those deals.
Yes, great point. Tell me the guy that's on the Bulls, Weddington, Cartwright of Purdue, that's better than Moses Malone or Akeem Olajuwon. Because that's who he lost to. Moses Malone and Akeem Olajuwon. Two top 50 players. And you had your centers are not top 100 players. So that's who he lost to. So stop doing that, Skip Bayless. I remember all this so vividly. That's why I get to paint this picture. Because a lot of people that, the Lakers, what they had to get through is that not only getting through, look, I understand the West, you know, you had the Rockets, and that was really it. But once you got to the finals, Skip, you had to beat the Celtics. That's what you had to get through. Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson. Four top 50 players. That's what you had to get through. You remember, Skip, Dennis Johnson was a finals MVP ever before he set foot. He was an all-time great. At the time, he was considered the best defensive guard in the history of the game. Prior to Michael Jordan. You know that. I know that. And then you got Larry Bird. Do I need to say anything about old Bird, old Larry Joe? And then you got Kevin McHale. You talk about Tim Duncan being fundamentally sound. McHale was that 15 years earlier. And then the Chief, all he did was just play hard, rebound. He wasn't much of a scorer, but you know what you was going to get from the Chief on a nightly basis. And then one year they had Nate Archibald. And then the next year they had Bill Walton coming off the bench. Skip, you need to stop this. You really need to stop this, Skip Bayless. You know what the Lakers represented, and you know what the Celtics represented. And we're going to talk about this a little later. Old Goat James had to go through two great dynasties. And you want to talk... We're going to talk about old Goat James, Shannon, and what he did and what teams had to do to take him down.
I hope not.
What?
He doesn't belong in this conversation because that would be blasphemy to put him in a conversation with Michael Jeffrey Jordan. But I'm here to tell you, I saw it firsthand. Those Bulls teams were the greatest defensive teams in the history of the NBA, and they would have shut down Showtime. Showtime wouldn't have got out running, and they would have had a hard time rebounding against this crew because even with Luke Longley at 7'2" tall, clogging the lane, and Winnington, they had enough size, height, strength, and just supreme nastiness. You couldn't even get the ball past half court against these guys. It would have been very difficult for Showtime to even score 100 points against this team in that era.
Skip, tell the people at home, the last man to win three consecutive regular season MVPs was who? One, Larry Joe Bird. That's what Magic Johnson was up against. That's what he was seeing. Three times he won the regular season MVP. That's what Magic had to go through every year. Or he had to go through, let that sink in, Skip. For 8 years straight, he either had to go through the Sixers or the Celtics. Michael got Supersonic. Wow, they were loaded. No mercy.
Bob McGinn of The Athletic pulled 17 NFL scouts ranking the best receivers in the upcoming draft. CeeDee Lamb took the top spot by just 1 point over Jerry Jeudy, but Lamb had 10 first-place votes compared to Jeudy's 5. So, Shannon, are you surprised that CeeDee had more first-place votes than your guy, Jerry Jeudy?
No, I think it's very close. And these are the two best receivers in football, but I'm still taking Jerry Jeudy. His ability to separate, his ability to get in and out of breaks. And Skip, I think we have the video. I was trying to explain it to you last week of what makes Jerry Jeudy so unique. The imagination, the ability to separate of what Jerry Jeudy brings to the table. His ability to run after the catch, playing in a big time program. He can play outside the numbers. He can play in the slot. But he's a very, very unique individual. Skip, and I believe it is close because CeeDee Lamb is a slightly bigger. They're about the same speed. Jeudy might be a little faster. Great hands, great run after the catch. But I think the thing for me that distinguishes Jeudy is his ability to run routes. He's not technically sound. He's technically advanced. That's what separates them in my book. So I got no problem with people saying, well, you know, Jeudy, I believe Judy's slightly better. And some saying, CeeDee Lamb is slightly better than Jeudy. But for me, I like Jerry Jeudy and his ability to create separation at the top of the break.
Okay, here's why I told you from the start of last football season that I'll take CeeDee Lamb over Jerry Jeudy. As one scout told Bob McGinn about CeeDee, he just catches the crap out of the ball. That's what he does. He catches it and he runs with it. He's hard to get on the ground. One scout compared him to Anquan Boldin, and I like that because he plays so physically the way Anquan did. Now, another scout said this about Jerry Jeudy, and this puts him in the perspective I see him in. The scout said that Jerry Jeudy has lived in the ultimate football playground with speed merchants on the outside, point guard at quarterback in Tua, five-star offensive line, draftable running back in Najee Harris who can catch it as well as run it, and Jerry Jeudy plays in the slot and was never pressed. Bingo! He's in the slot, Shannon, often with three other receivers split out wide who are going to be first-round picks. And when you're not pressed in the slot, you kind of play smaller than you measured. And if you're not pressed, if you don't have anybody nose-to-nose with you, you don't have to worry about getting off physical press coverage. Yeah, you can run technically advanced routes because you're kind of running against air. I think he's going to have a harder time in pro football if somebody drafts him and says, you're our number one. I told you from the start, Jerry Jeudy's a two. He's more of a slot receiver. CeeDee is a one.
I love how this, he said he played the ultimate point guard. CeeDee Lamb's quarterback was Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. The last 2 years, there was a number one overall draft pick. Okay, that. He also played next to Hollywood Brown, who was a number one draft pick. They didn't mention that. Kyler's offense, last year in the league, he had the number one offensive line in college football. But that guy didn't mention that. Just Jerry Jeudy. Skip, I get it. If you want to highlight your guy, okay, fine. But don't try to highlight your guy and dismiss what he had, which was two number one overall draft picks at quarterback, a number one draft pick at wide receiver, the number one offensive line. Those running backs that he had were 6-7 yards a clip, over 1,000 yards rushing. So don't make it seem like a CeeDee Lamb was playing with bum quarterbacks, that his offensive line was terrible and they didn't have runners in the backfield. Don't do that. Make your point. Say, yes, this guy's tremendous after the catch. This guy has a huge catch radius. But when you bring in other things, okay, CeeDee Lamb had the same thing as Jerry Jeudy has. Tua, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield. Okay, I get all that, Skip, but like I'm saying, it's close. But his, Skip, and you know why guys don't get pressed? Why you think guys end up there trying to put, why do you think guys are not trying to put their hands on Antonio Brown? Because you know if you press and miss, you're gone. He's gone. There's a very few people that you can press and make up that. You don't be really wanting to press Julio Jones. Why? Not only is he physical, Skip, the guy's 4'3". He gonna get up out of there. So you miss a guy like Jerry Jeudy. You press a guy like Odell and miss him. is good night. That's why they don't press. And very few teams press the slot anyway, because normally, Skip, that guy has option. He has two ways to go. It's a lot easier to press outside than it is to press inside. I give you that. But Jerry Jeudy can also play outside of the numbers. So it's going to be very, very interesting. For me, I would take Jerry Jeudy because of his ability to separate at the top of routes.
Shannon, last year, CeeDee Lamb's quarterback was a guy Alabama rejected because he, quote unquote, couldn't throw. Jalen Hurts was the Oklahoma quarterback last year, and CeeDee Lamb was really the only go-to receiver, CD or bust, for Jalen Hurts, who improved, I thought, dramatically as a thrower of the football. I would draft him. I think you can win games with Jalen Hurts in the NFL. But CeeDee Lamb was it. And still, nobody, he got double and triple covered, albeit in the Big 12, which is a passing league. But nobody could stop him.
With no DBs.
Nobody could get him on the ground, even Texas.
Skip, you remember, reminds me of a guy like Mike Thomas. You know Mike Thomas? He doesn't have anybody, does he, Skip? And guess what? Double and triple coverage and had 150 catches. So, Skip, if I want to get you the ball, I can get you the ball. And in the Big 12, where they don't really have defensive backs, bring that to the SEC. No mercy.